some were silent. Robert Kerr, the senator from the state of Oklahoma, was one of the first to defend his president.
I share the deep regret which I know the president felt when he was compelled to relieve General MacArthur of his command. The general, however, left him no choice. That choice was not between MacArthur and Dean Acheson. It was between MacArthur and the Joint Chiefs of Staff. It was not between MacArthur and the State Department. It was between the general and the Defense Department. It was not a choice between fighting in Korea or pulling out of Korea. It was a choice between doing the job we have in Korea and getting it over with, or permitting MacArthur to get us into an all-out war with Red China.
Among those who were willing to stand up and be counted as backing the president were some Republicans, including Lodge of Massachusetts, Duff of Pennsylvania, and Leverett Saltonstall of Massachusetts, whom you hear now.
I do not see how any American citizen who thinks this problem through can help feeling the president could have done anything but to take some affirmative action against General MacArthur when he felt that his policies were not receiving the general's loyal support.
In the House, where many a Southern Democrat votes with his Republican colleagues, Congressman Overton Brooks of Louisiana said this:
I feel that a soldier should learn to take as well as to give commands. Under our form of government, the civilian authority remains in final control. When the military takes over control, on that day, our republic is doomed.
And Senator John Sparkman of Alabama, a United States delegate to the UN, said this about General MacArthur:
It is unfortunate that he apparently was not able to recognize the fact that in the Korean War, we were joint participants with other member nations of the United Nations, and that it was necessary to have a common understanding and a common undertaking. I feel that the president's action in removing General MacArthur was inevitable.
And in the debate, which grows heavier and hotter every hour, both sides attempted to use the case of Billy Mitchell, once opposed by Calvin Coolidge and judged by Douglas MacArthur, among others, to prove their point. Senator Stiles Bridges, Republican from New Hampshire.
MacArthur joins the other noted group of General Billy Mitchell and General George Patton, men who place devotion to their country above being a good soldier and carrying out blind orders.
Senator Toby, who has been most articulate of recent weeks, declined to comment. So did Paul Douglas of Illinois. Governor Dewey came out for MacArthur. Adlai Stevenson, the governor of Illinois, backed Truman. General Dwight D. Eisenhower was in Koblenz, Germany, when the story broke. Here is CBS Berlin correspondent Richard Hottolett on what General Ike had to say about his old commander.
General Eisenhower was in Germany inspecting his North Atlantic forces when he heard the news of General MacArthur's dismissal. He was obviously shocked. At first, he would make no comment, but then he turned to reporters and said, I hope he does not return home to become a controversial figure. I would hate to see acrimony develop. Then General Eisenhower paused and continued as though thinking out loud. I know General MacArthur well. We are old buddies. I worked in his office for 9 years, and although I was the only one who argued with him on official matters, he kept me with him. I was a major, and he was a four-star general. General Eisenhower paid tribute to what he called General MacArthur's shrewdness in the business of war, but added, when you put on a uniform, there are certain inhibitions you accept.
The British, 5 hours ahead of us in their time, had the story long before most Americans. Many Truman foes say he fired MacArthur because of British pressure. What was the London reaction to all this? Here is CBS correspondent Howard K. Smith speaking from London.
President Truman is wholly in the right, and in every democratic country except his own, his action will be received with unmixed approval and relief. That was the Manchester Guardian's commentary on the great event of the week, and it sums up sentiment in all papers and in both political parties here in Britain. The pattern for most of the editorialists was set by the official statement of Foreign Secretary Morrison, which was formally endorsed by Winston Churchill in the House of Commons. The line is, gentle approval of President Truman's action coupled with glowing tributes to General MacArthur's past military services.
By mid-afternoon on Wednesday, there was a second announcement from the White House. In one of the quickest scheduled presidential addresses in radio history, it was announced that President Truman would speak to the nation on both radio and television at 10:30 Eastern Standard Time.
My fellow Americans, I want to talk to you plainly tonight about what we are doing in Korea and about our policy in the Far East. In the simplest terms, What we are doing in Korea is this. We are trying to prevent a world war, not to start one. But you may ask, why don't we bomb Manchuria and China itself? Why don't we assist the Chinese nationalist troops to land on the mainland of China? If we were to do these things, we would be running a very grave risk of starting a general war. If we were to do these things, we would become entangled in a vast conflict on the continent of Asia, and our task would become immeasurably more difficult all over the world.
President Truman spoke for 18 minutes, talked about MacArthur specifically for less than 1 minute.
I have thought long and hard about this question of extending the war in Asia. I have discussed it many times with the ablest military advisors in the country. A number of events have made it evident that General MacArthur did not agree with that policy. I have therefore considered it essential to relieve General MacArthur so that there would be no doubt or confusion as to the real purpose and aim of our policy. It was with the deepest personal regret that I found myself compelled to take this action. General MacArthur is one of our greatest military commanders. But the cause of world peace is much more important than any individual.
It wasn't until Thursday that the newspaper editorial pattern was established. The predictable were as anticipated. The Hearst, Scripps Howard, McCormick groups vociferously backing MacArthur. Mr. Truman had his supporters among the editors, too. We asked a number of editors to read for you what they wrote for their readers. For reasons of time, we have been forced to edit the editors, but have done our best to retain the pertinent and at times pungent portions of their editorials. First, from New York, Glenn Neville, executive editor of The Mirror, a Hearst tabloid.
The greatest American general of our day, Douglas MacArthur, has been dismissed to please the cupidity of Great Britain, the ignorance of Dean Acheson, the jealousy of General George Marshall. America has been defeated by this act of vengeance. We do not include Harry Truman in this listing of those responsible for our failure on the diplomatic field of battle. We do not include him because he is too small.
Also from New York, Whitelaw Reed, editor of the Herald Tribune.
General MacArthur is a soldier of the highest abilities. To lose his service and his talents is, in a very true sense, a tragedy for the nation. Yet he is himself the architect of a situation which really left the president with no other course. But if the president simply leaves the matter there until some other crisis emerges, there will be small gain. If the Western strategy of the president is to succeed, it will need far more active and ardent leadership than it has so far received.
From New England, the Providence Journal, which had oddly enough asked for MacArthur's removal before Truman, Sevelin Brown III, associate editor.
General MacArthur's personal right to his own opinion in this controversy has never been questioned. Now, relieved of military responsibility, he may assert that opinion as vigorously and eloquently as only he knows how. It is simply incredible to us that any responsible member of Congress should seriously propose trying to impeach the president for exercising his explicit constitutional power as commander-in-chief over an insubordinate soldier. We again urge Mr. Truman to retire Secretary of State Dean Acheson and replace him with a man who has the zeal and the ability to go before the country as a truly effective manager of our international affairs.
From Providence to the Midwest, and Jack Knight, publisher of the Chicago Daily News.
Someone had to yield, willingly or otherwise. Since General MacArthur found it impossible to suppress his personal convictions as to the overall strategy of the Korean War, the president faced the painful choice of replacing MacArthur with a more tractable field commander, or admitting to the world that the commander-in-chief can be successfully defied by a general under his command. We have had enough pious talk. What the people want to know is, where are we going from here, and why?
For the Kansas City Star, here is Henry Haskell, Jr., foreign editor.
As Truman sees it, the fundamental concept of a geographically limited resistance to aggression was what MacArthur could not accept, and consequently was what made his removal inevitable from the administration's point of view. The fact is that until the United Nations General Assembly decides what it is prepared to accept by way of a settlement, not only can no answer be given to MacArthur's argument, but a strong presumption exists that he is right, that our men are fighting in Korea without any agreed and realizable objective short of total defeat. With or without MacArthur, this remains an intolerable situation.
From Kansas City to St. Louis, and Joseph Pulitzer, St. Louis Post-Dispatch, Irving Dillard.
Mr. Truman has only done what General MacArthur himself would have done to any subordinate officer who made a practice of ignoring military orders from higher authority. It is ridiculous to suggest, as some Republicans do, that the president and his military advisors in Washington committed treason in his order to General MacArthur. If there is any suggestion of treason, it is on the side of those who would subvert the historic control of the military by civilians in the United States.
Now, from the Rocky Mountain states, the Denver Post, publisher E. Palmer Hoyt.
General MacArthur's supporters will say that he did nothing wrong. They will defend his right to speak out about conduct of the Korea War. They will say, as Supreme Commander, he had the right to criticize presidential decisions. Under the military system, General MacArthur had no such right. President Truman's bravery will be rewarded by renewed confidence from abroad.
From Denver to the Pacific Coast, and city editor Bud Lewis of the Los Angeles Times.
The most powerful nation in the world has listened to the mewlings of its impotent allies and has thrown in with the appeasers. Asia, apparently, will be surrendered to communism, and there will be dancing in the streets of London, Paris, and Rome over the new peace. The new peace in our time. That is the significance of the recall of General MacArthur.
By Thursday afternoon, a little of the tension in Washington had subsided. No longer was there any serious talk of impeachment, although some talk persisted that Truman might ultimately have to sacrifice Acheson's scalp. The news from Tokyo was that General MacArthur would start home on Monday. Senator Robert Taft, many weeks ago, accepted an invitation to speak on Thursday night at New York's Yale Club. He had written his speech in advance. On Thursday, en route to New York, his office announced that he was rewriting his remarks to cover the MacArthur story. This is what the GOP leader said at the Yale Club in New York last night.
I think the last time I spoke here, I spoke for class of 1910 meeting, just the day after Franklin Roosevelt died. I gave the class an estimate of the character of Harry Truman as I had known him in those years in the Senate. They thought I was very rough on Harry Truman.
The senator has found no reason to adjust his estimate. The thing we must do in the Far East, he said, is bomb Manchuria and China and assist the Chinese nationalists to land on the mainland of China. But he doubts this will be done.
The truth is, I believe that this policy is not undertaken, first, because of the prejudices of Secretary of State Acheson and Secretary of Defense Marshall against Chiang, and second, because it would upset the trade of the British with communist China and is bitterly opposed by the British government.
The senator acknowledges that to bomb Manchuria and China might bring Russia into a general war, but he feels it would be worth the chance.
The bombing of communications and concentrations in China might have more possibility of bringing Russia into the war. But without it, our Korean War presents a ridiculous spectacle. If there is no other way to bring war in Korea to an end, I think we would have to bomb these Chinese communications and Chinese armies and take a chance of Russian aggression.
The debate continues. Its heat and passion appear to have caused some to forget that the war also goes on. Most of us are agreed that it is our duty and our destiny to defend the free world, in concert with our allies, against aggressive world communism. General MacArthur wanted to do it one way. The President, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, and a majority of Congress wanted to do it another way. The General was relieved of his command. The action has vastly encouraged our allies and divided this country. If we are to do our duty over the long haul, we may need more stability and less hysteria and blind partisanship than we have displayed during the past 3 days. Eventually, the people will decide in their own way and in their own time which concept is the right one. Meanwhile, there is a war to be fought. The enemy buildup continues. General Matt Ridgway now commands. His views on why we fight in Asia and what our aims are were clearly defined in a recent speech he made to the forces under his command. General Ridgway.
I want to tell you why we are here. We are here because of the decisions of the properly constituted authorities of our respective governments. The answer is simple, because further comment is unnecessary. It is conclusive, because the loyalty we give and expect precludes any slightest questioning of those orders. The real issues are whether or not the power of Western civilization, as God has permitted it to flower in our own beloved lands, shall defy and defeat communism. Whether the rule of men who shoot their prisoners, enslave their citizens, and deride the dignity of man shall displace the rule of those to whom the individual and his individual rights are sacred.